Hey guys, my name is John, and you're listening to TCK Tales. TCK is defined as third culture kid, so that is someone who has lived in this in-between space between two cultures, and as a result of that has created a third culture, and this podcast exists for them to hear your stories and to process what it's like growing up in this weird place of in-between and the benefits and the drawbacks and the results. Often these are missionary kids, military kids, international students, mixed racial kids, all kinds of people with all kinds of issues. I am one. I love one. I talk with one. So that's this podcast. And today I have a really special interview with you guys. It's going to be a little different than how we normally do because of the guest that I have on and the person that I have with me today, but I think you guys will really enjoy it. The guest that I have today is Juan Ko. He is a friend of mine, a fellow student, and someone that I met in international student orientation at Moody. He was one of the first people that I met at Moody, and from there, we've kind of continue to have a friendship, and I wanted to interview him specifically to understand his experience and to get an understanding of the Korean church in general. And my reason for that was I went to Moody and all of a sudden I was surrounded by these MKs who were not from America, and that kind of changed my perspective a little bit on what missionary life looks like. Then I found out that South Korea is one of the largest sending nations in the country and in the world, and I was like, wow, that's insane. And so I wanted to try and get some representation of Korean MKs here as well, because it's something that I don't think a lot of Americans think about, is the fact that South Korean MKs are a thing and they exist, and they are also TCKs. If you listen back to an episode in season 2 with Grace Choi, we kind of delve into that a little bit more as well. And so just kind of getting that perspective and getting that understanding, as well as getting an understanding of Korea, of the Korean church in general and Korean church on the mission field, because based off of my proximity and my association with some of these Korean MKs, is they experience life and they experience culture differently than we Americans experience life and experience culture. So it's a fantastic conversation about church and about missions and about life, and I hope you guys enjoy it. So it's kind of split up into two parts. He talks about his story a little bit, and then we go into a conversation about the Korean church in general. So here is Juan Ko. Juan is a MK from South Korea who spent a majority of his life in Cambodia. So he talks about that. So without further ado, here's Juan Ko with his TCK tale.
Hello, my name is Juan Ko. In Korean, it's Ko Juan. I grew up in Cambodia ever since I was 6. So that was the March of 2002 until I graduated high school, until I came to Moody Bible Institute.
So if you could go back and tell yourself something about your TCK experience, what would you say?
Yeah, actually, right off the bat, there are a lot of times when I returned to Korea, people ask me, isn't it hard to live as a missionary kid? And I would tell them, actually, I want to be a missionary myself in the future, because I cannot imagine a life better than seeing parents who just dedicate their whole lives for Jesus. I actually do not know a life that is not a missionary kid. Meaning, a lot of people I see who struggle as a missionary kid, especially the Korean missionary kids, are people who come in middle school, high school, who's already had this life in Korea with all the riches, not the riches, but, you know, it's a lot more convenient technology-wise, education-wise, language-wise, food-wise, family-wise, everything. But for me, seeing my parents love Jesus was enough. And I was blessed to be in a family where my dad, as much as he had to serve the Lord in his church, he did his best for his family. As much as my mom was going out to pray and serve the people, she really poured in her love and genuine care for us. To grow up as a missionary kid, I think one of the bigger challenges would be learning their language. We always talk about contextualization, but it's hard when they come to you with a negative approach. And they come to you. So whenever I walked in the streets, people would say, they would do something, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what is that? And I realized they're trying to imitate my language, imitate my facial expressions. At first, I was like, oh, why would they do that? And then eventually I was like, oh, I hate them. But that was only like 3 years of my missionary kid life. Eventually, I also realized that because of, they didn't have enough interactions with foreigners by when I first went. They were really, really poor. There was no paved roads. And quickly, like 4 or 5 years after I arrived in Cambodia, Cambodia started to develop economically, technology, medical areas and all that, education-wise too. So they start to realize, oh, this foreigner thing is nothing new now. So they saw me as one of the many foreigners in Cambodia. When my parents went to Cambodia, that was before I knew anything about Cambodia, they had to write a will because they thought they were going to die in an accident or some type of war or anything like that, because there was a guy named Pol Pot. It's easy to understand if you consider him as Hitler of Cambodia, except it wasn't against the Jewish people, but it was against his own people. And what his dream was to make a communist state. So he killed every intellectuals. They say about a third of the people died, of the population died in like a very few years. And this was only in like 1960s, 1970s. So when this ended, literally you could say all the smart people, not all the educated people, were dead. So Cambodia was at like this ground zero. What this guy also did, he burned all the money in Cambodia so that everyone will return to farm. What he would do, line up all the men and women, doesn't matter if they were married or not, they would create new couples. And if they lived in the capital, they would send a couple into the province. If they lived in the province, they send in the capital. So all this was to create a community where it was completely new. People didn't know where they were living, who they were living with. They had no heart to unite to go against the government. So it was just to create this completely new communist society. So brothers killed brothers, mothers killed children, 15-year-old, 16-year-old teenagers killed their parents. So it was just chaos. But what's more tragic is this is only 30, 40, 50 years ago. So people who are in their 50s, some are in their 40s, 60s, remember this. And this actually really, really affects missionaries' ministry, because now people are focused on survival. People are so focused on money and blessings. So they would say they are Christians just for the sake of receiving help, money, and just for the sake of being in some type of protection under the church. But when they get married, they will call like all these Buddhist monks. So it's Christianity is growing, but in the heart level, we have no idea how big this is. And also Cambodia, every school is next to the Buddhist temples. So there's definitely a spiritual warfare that's going on throughout their entire life. So because of this, Cambodia became very, very poor. Cambodia had no paved roads. Cambodia had no good hospitals. And afterwards they had, or before that, it was France. France, they were a French colony. So a lot of the culture, a lot of hospitals, a lot of the systems, a lot of the language too was affected by France. Anyway, in the midst of all this, my parents went to Cambodia. And in the midst of all this, I went to Cambodia. So when I first went, it was all dust. All dust. So when the first shopping mall came in, there was a huge long line in front of the escalator, because they were scared to ride the escalator. And this was like 2005, decades after escalators were created in other countries. So it was funny. When the first pizza shop showed up, we had to wait like 3 hours to go there. But Cambodia quickly developed economically because the leader decided to open up to the foreigners. So this was a drastic change from a communist state to a very open state. So when I first went, there was a missionary school called Logos International School. This was one of the greatest blessings of my life. I cannot imagine any better school because all the teachers with great academic backgrounds. Like my science teacher was from Johns Hopkins. It's crazy, yeah. But they were missionaries. It didn't matter how much they were paid, because it was really nothing compared to what they could make at home in the U.S. But they would dedicate their time, dedicate their money, dedicate their spiritual knowledge and all that to just bless the students. And it was like those teachers like Mr. Moon, Mr. Barrett, Miss Cooper, Miss Scholes, Miss Smith, so many teachers, Miss Baden, and we had this real relationship. And growing up there and knowing how much struggle Koreans in Korea were going through because of education, leaving home in the morning, coming back midnight to go to this academy, this school, that school. I knew how great of a blessing for me it was for me, because I went off 3 o'clock. I played soccer for like 2 hours, hung out with friends, did the homework for like an hour or two, go back to bed 9 or 10 p.m., had great deals. So that would be like rice noodles in the morning, barbecue rice, and less than like $2-3 for U.S. currency. Just, I knew actually, ever since I was young, that this was a blessing. That I was at a country where I did not know what to speak, what to do, but I knew God was with our family. No, I know I'm going there and here and there, but my parents, I want to introduce my parents to ministry very quickly to introduce Cambodia. But as I said, Cambodian schools are right next to Buddhist temples, meaning they grew up with Buddhist music, Buddhist traditions, Buddhist rituals, Buddhist ideas, Buddhist, these thoughts that you get influenced by religion is huge. So what my dad does is he built a school and he built a playground on purpose, a good playground, so the kids will just come to church and just hang out and playing Christian music in the Cambodian language, opening up free English schools, also having seminaries in the afternoon for all the older people, having times just for personal Bible studies. And my dad and mom would carry around these speakers and go into different villages, put up the mat, put up some music, and kids will randomly come and just join and dance. So what all this is about is familiarizing them with Christian culture in the midst of this very founded Buddhist culture within their life. And like 200-400 kids will come to our church on Sundays just worshiping. My dad fell off the roof while he was doing construction. Our family, it was tragic because we thought he was going to die. But it didn't matter because we knew that God had a purpose in this. And we cried when we saw that building finish being constructed. Not because of the building, but because of the hundreds of kids that were inside that building just worshiping God. In this nation where the Buddhist, Hinduist, ancestral worship, all these type of, let's say, paganism or non-Christian thoughts are like dominating. It's just beautiful to see these kids worshiping God, crying the name Jesus, crying the name God our Father, and reading names in the Bible, learning about the Bible. I don't know. God blessed me so much to see all this, not just see, participate in all this. I was teaching English to the Cambodians when I was like in high school, like freshman high school. When I was in middle school, elementary, I would go into different churches, different sites to help construct churches, help fix broken houses. I carried a lot of bricks. It was fun because I was doing it with my friends, with my family. Cambodia is really hot. Many mosquitoes. Maybe those things are my struggles. Yeah, maybe. But even then, because we had God bless me with the air conditioner. And God bless me with a house where I could spray all the mosquitoes. It's fun to catch mosquitoes too, you know, before sleep. This clapping sound that my mom will always do for 10 minutes before sleep to catch all the mosquitoes. You know, I had a good sleep.
What is, because like I've been in Southeast Asia, I've had some interaction. So like, what is Korea's relationship with Buddhism and like the general, like, because I know like in Thailand and in other places I've been, like, Asian culture is Buddhism, you know?
Mm. Okay.
So like what is, because Korea is like a very, very Christian nation. What is Korea's relationship with its Buddhist past and like Southeast Asian culture, I guess?
Yeah. Before I talk about Korean church,
yeah,
I would like to address this hot topic these days between North Korea and South Korea, North Korea and America. The reason I mention this is because Christianity began before we were split. Christianity came in through actually Britain and American missionaries. I think the first missionary was a Methodist missionary. A missionary came to Korea, and when he landed, after he got off the ship, he landed, he knew that the soldier was about to kill him. So he gave him a Bible. And this soldier killed the missionary, so the first missionary was martyred in like a few seconds. But this guy was like, oh, I should take this to my uncle, because I hate my uncle, and I know that this is a religion book from a foreign country, and the government will punish him. So some type of story like that. And so he took the Bible to his uncle, and his uncle was like, oh, this Bible, I don't care, it's good quality paper. So what he did was he used all these pages of the Bible to paint,
wallpaper?
As a wallpaper. And what's funny is, I think this was some type of translation. He used it as a paper, but when he was sleeping, he would look at the ceiling, and there was scripture. And he would read it, read the walls, and eventually became a Christian himself. And the reason I mentioned this is later in the years, there was a great revival at Pyongyang. This is the capital of current North Korea, but this was before. And when this great revival happened, people skipped schools, people skipped work, simply to go around and tell their neighbors, I'm sorry for this specific sin, please forgive me. So there was this great movement of forgiving and forgiveness. And Korean Christianity bursted out there. And the reason I mentioned about this house with wallpaper or Bibles was because this great revival took place in that very house. Mm. So God moved many, many people to work in Korea. Nothing was accidental. It was all under God's sovereign plan of grace, you know? And when the Japanese came to colonize South Korea, many, many people were split. Some went to be part of Japan, part of the, what do you call these people fighting for independence. A lot of people who fought for independence were actually Christians. And these Christians fought for independence, not just as like a national independence, but for this freedom of religion. Not just religion, but just to have this national freedom, to really have this root in this country where God has given. So when Korea, similar to America, when God gained the independence after World War II, they started their nation by laying their hands on the Bible. So we might think, oh, Korea is a Christian state then. But no, because when I first came to Cambodia around then, it was like 20-30% Christianity in Korea, including Catholics and all denominations. But still, a lot of the Buddhist culture is grounded in Korea because for the past 2,000-4,000 years of South Korean history, Buddhism, ancestral worship, all these culture from China and all these things were rooted. So Korea is still a pretty Buddhist country, culturally, historically. But what God did is use all the type of churches to really make Christianity one of the strong big religion, to the point you will see 3-4 churches in one street. I remember some people saying, oh, this is all like a cemetery, because they will see crosses, red crosses everywhere. But another thing Korea is famous for is prayer. What type of prayer? It's early morning prayer. Mm. They'll get up 4 a.m., 5 a.m., gather as a church, pray for all type of things. And I hear countless testimonies of God working in their lives through that prayer. And not only prayer, Korea is also famous for sending out countless missionaries. And there's something different about America. I see a lot of mission organizations in America that people pair up with, do fundraising, and then go out, right? Korea, actually, you pair up with a church first. So you have a home church that sends you. And depending on the denomination of the church, they will pair you up with this organization that has similar mission goals and purposes. Of course, there are different mission organizations, but more generally, Korean missionaries will pair up with a church that pairs up with a denomination-related mission organization.
I think think that's a better model because, like, as I've been talking with, like, my church back home, because my church is very mission-oriented, and he talks, and they talk a lot in, like, actually, partnership with a church within American, like, our generation of American people, like, leaving for missions organization, it's significantly going down. So, like, it's more like I'm going with an organization, and then I will have one or two churches that financially support me, but I don't have a church home. I don't have a sending church.
Yeah. The only thing is, sending churches are powerful, but Korean Christianity has been declining recently. Mm. Meaning their eyes have been not focused outwards, like the way we should be, like the way Jesus wanted us to do, reach Judea, Samaria, and to the end of the earth. Korea has been struggling, I don't think financially necessarily, but that's what they always say, because they forgot about their past when they were really poor. But they have been turning their eyes inward. So they have been neglecting, supporting, praying for, and loving, and really considering the churches outside Korea as their one church, as one church. Mm. So one of the strengths of a home church, sending church, is that you could maintain this good relationship, not only financially, but just emotionally, spiritually, just having this link, knowing that you're part of this family. But this becomes some type of a problem when the leadership of the church changes.
And then they stop sending you money.
Yeah, they'll try to send different missionaries that they know. And because church has been declining spiritually, they've been more focused inward. So missionaries who have already been sent have been neglected. So some type of problems can occur with this model as well. So I don't think any model is stronger or more perfect because of our sinful nature. But as the Holy Spirit works. So what is the trend right now is that people have been becoming more professional missionaries, meaning they have a job in the land that they serve. Like they do coffee shop, they're English teachers, they do counseling, they do all that. They might actually just do part-time work if the government allows them. But that has been more of the model these days. But of course, there are advantages of church sending missionaries. But sometimes that could be there are disadvantages to them too. Anyway, so that's what the model has been. And something about South Korea is it's the culture of us. It's the culture of we. Whereas America's is the culture of me, culture of I, or the culture of you. So the we thing is strong. So even when Koreans go to a foreign country to do missions, they will connect first with missionaries from the same organization, especially because I said the Korean church will pair up with same denomination organizations. So let's say they click in many ways together. And a lot of the kids meet at an international school. A lot of the missionary kids go to international schools where they will naturally bond with other Koreans as well. First, because of the language. Because usually they don't know English when they first arrive in the mission field or Cambodia for me. So they bond. And through the children, their parents will also meet and bond together. Not only that, the restaurants that they go to, the seminars that they do together. There are a lot of occasions where Korean missionaries can bond together. Naturally, enforces that bond. I don't know how to say this, but one thing that's sad though is that there are a lot of this emotional bond, eating together, spending time together, but there is so much dissension. There's no unity when it comes to ministry. This is hard because it's like, oh, I love to spend time with you, Koreans. I love to spend time with you and your family, but the ministry that we do, for example, the church that you built, the church that I started, is your church and my church. So there is unity within the church, but not within the missionaries. Something strange about this is American culture is I and you, but when they arrive at the mission field, their ministry is very bonded. I don't know why this is the case, but this has been what I've been observing.
That's really interesting.
It's really interesting.
Yeah.
And so there is this middle point that I see that Korean missionaries can learn from American missionaries and American missionaries can learn from Korean missionaries. And one of the reasons I see is because the nature of the home church and mission organization model. Mm. Because there are a lot of mission organizations in America, there are a lot of people doing different ministries that will come together. But because although there are people in Korea might be in the same organization, but their real root or real home is from the churches that they send them, they have a different ministry. So there are different demands from the churches, whereas mission organizations will have the same mission-oriented mind and goals that just bond them together. Do you see what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense with like my parents' ministry as well, because like they went independently with different, somewhat sending churches. Like my grandparents' churches sort of sent both of them, but they had multiple churches. Like my mom tells a story of she was like just driving through, and then she just felt the leading of the Holy Spirit. She just saw a church. She just felt the leading of the Holy Spirit, so she just pulled into the parking lot. Never been to this church before.
Yeah.
Walked into the pastor's office. He's like, "Hey, I'm about to go to Africa. Can I give a speech on Sunday?" And the pastor was like, "Sure."
Yeah.
No interaction with this church at all before that. So my parents. Church affiliation was very different based on where they were and what was available and who was working with that, like, and like they were doing discipleship and then they just like went to a church for their personal edification, and that looked differently based on where they were, and which makes a little bit more sense, and there was a lot more.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So that's one of the strengths of the American missionaries, that they're able to really serve the people there together. Another problem is it's for both America and Korean churches, missionaries, but it's funny. If you go to a church that Americans found, like started in Cambodia, the Cambodians will worship in like ways that American churches worship. If you go to a church that a Korean missionary started, they worship like Koreans. And you see it clearly. The systems, the program, the way people interact, the way people speak, like let's say the Christianese that they speak, it's all like influenced by the theology and the culture that the missionary brings. And rather, there's so much strength when some missionaries will start or do this church where it really respects the Cambodian culture. But this is hard because Christianity is at a very infant stage, a very young stage in Cambodia, so it's hard to say what is the Cambodian Christian culture yet, although it has been growing recently with a lot of missionaries serving mission organizations. So
It's interesting. So yeah, because I would think prior to this conversation that like maybe having a more Korean style church in Cambodia would be better than an American style church, because Korean culture would be more similar to Cambodian culture. What do you think?
So this is something very important. We call Southeast Asia Indochina, meaning so much culture, so much language, so much religion and rituals and practice are influenced by two countries. Indo meaning India, China meaning China. China has a lot of Buddhist culture, but has a lot of ancestral worship. India, whereas some Buddhists too, but Hinduism is strong there, strong. Meaning Southeast Asia, Buddhist temples are like what's there, what you see in your eyes. It's Buddhist, 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 but when you go inside, when you see the way they practice, religion, it's very similar to a Hinduist culture, and the way they live is very similar to ancestral worship. So this polytheistic worship and practices are very, very strong in Southeast Asia. And I cannot speak for all Southeast Asia, but this is the case, especially for Cambodia, why Christianity is so hard to grow, because Christianity will just merge in as one of those many religions among the Hindu religion, Buddhist culture, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. That's the hard part about Cambodia, whereas Vietnam is a communist state, so it's either this or that. Mm-hmm. Although it has been changing recently too, but do you see what I mean? When you have many, many options, Christianity becomes one of those options.
Just one of
whereas
many.
Whereas if you had persecution with your religion, then you'll have to choose one.
That makes sense with like Thailand as well, just with that. Like that, I'd never... This is my ignorance, but I'd never heard like that Indo. Like I've always wondered where the Hinduistic themes came from. It's just in that, you see that.
Because Buddhism ultimately also comes from India.
Yeah.
Hinduism comes from India. India is actually where a lot of these old ancient religions come from, and I think even a lot of the people, like their blood, is from India.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the first civilizations has been in India and China, those areas too. So it's a very, very strange mixture of thoughts. I am the leader of this group called Unforgotten. It's a prayer group for North Korea. Recently, in the news, North Korea, Kim Jong-un, Mr. Trump has been appearing a lot. But as Christians, it's crucial for us to see that and not judge and not criticize and not to think pessimistically first. Our first response must be remembering the persecuted Christians in North Korea. The people who are stripped of every type of human rights in their life ever since they're born. We have to remember those people who are born into idolatry, who are born into worshiping Kim Jong-un. We are not, as Christians, concerned about what the government is doing as much as we must be with what's happening to all these people who are dying daily. We talk about social injustice in America a lot. Colleges, wherever you go. What greater social injustice is there than seeing your brothers and sisters being eternally condemned day by day? So I ask you to join us at your homes to pray for North Korea, for the people there. And there are, although you may think there's not many, many ways to pray for them through organizations like Cornerstone. It's a Korean organization, but you can type like Cornerstone USA or different type of ways to access information and news about Christians and the way people live in North Korea. So please pray for North Korea whenever you see them in the news, whenever God reminds you. And if you actually want to join us, we have this prayer group. This semester was Wednesday 4:40 to 6 p.m. at Broman Chapel Room in Colby 1, but next semester our schedule may change. But if you ask any of our students who know me at Moody, Juwon Ko, you will be able to come and join. And it's a powerful prayer group because the Holy Spirit definitely is working, and we could sense God is going to do something very soon for North and South Korea.
What surprised me about my conversation with Juwon is the idea that one version of church models is not better than the other, but both have their faults. As we talk about the fact that Americans are more have sending organizations and are less rooted in a church, whereas Korean churches are more rooted in a church, but also creates divisiveness amongst the community within mission ministry, and then there's a lot of divisiveness amongst the community of American missionaries outside of ministry. And it's just this interesting catch-22 of not one model is better than the other, but just whatever works within your culture is a wonderful lesson that I hope you guys take from this. I'm kind of, as I'm moving away from just straight stories that I have to digest and talk through meta-narratives and into more long-form conversations, you'll kind of hear me process the conversation as it goes. And this period of time will be, if I am editing, think of anything, any other details that I want to touch on, I will discuss this. But it's pretty straightforward. It's really interesting. I hope you guys enjoyed that conversation and research. If you're at Moody and you're starting, now, check out the North Korean prayer group and just continue to pray for North Korea and for the persecuted church that's happening there. It's amazing to think that the Korean church that we know today started in North Korea, and now there are Christians literally dying there. So just in your prayers, think about North Korea and what is going on. And if you know anybody from Korea, reach out to them and talk. It's been interesting to speak with people from both North and South Korea about what is happening, like Juwon Ko, to understand and get a perspective that we don't often get in America and in the news media. And as TCKs, you guys kind of know this already. If you have enjoyed this podcast, please tell somebody about it. Word of mouth is the best way to get the podcast out there. And a great way to do that is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or whatever you listen to podcasts. So please do that as well. Leave a 5-star review. And I would just like to read a couple of the podcast thanks to these people who have given reviews and talked, such as Just Croissants. He gave a 5-star review and he said, "Great mission here," is the title of it. "I love the attitude of the hosts and the guests on this podcast and how they seek to live and reflect on their MK experience with hope, intentionality, mature honesty. Everyone here is a great communicator, and the production of this show is high enough quality that I think it will become a really helpful resource in the future to big organizations and lonely individuals and everyone in between." This person is an MK and international school teacher. So thank you. Just nice to know that there's something happening, and that is my desire with this podcast. So thank you. So if you like this podcast, give it a 5-star review. We are currently 5 out of 5. So that's great. Keep hit up in that regard. Review it wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. And yeah, like us on Facebook. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/tcktales. There's a lot of really great content. And as I get more time, I'm trying to do more. Life has kind of hit a little bit. And then finally, check out my website, tcktales.com. And while you're there, check out the Share Your Stories page. If you would like to be a guest on the podcast and you have a story to tell, shoot me an email and we'll talk. And then we'll schedule an initial interview and we'll go from there. I would love to hear your story. There's been some really great engagement from there already. And I'm really excited for some of these stories to come on the podcast in the near future. We are marching slowly towards 50 episodes, so I'm excited about that, and I have plans for what I'm going to do for my 50th episode. Finally, this podcast is an extension of my ministry and how I live and provide for my family. And so if you would like to support the podcast, because there's only so much I could do for free, and I love being able to provide this content for free, but if you would like to support this podcast financially, you can do that. There is a link in the show notes to support me on Anchor and help me out in that way. So if you feel touched or called by this ministry, feel free to do that as well. I will see you guys again in another 2 weeks. Well, maybe another week, since this one's kind of late coming out, but I will see you guys later with another TCK Tale. TCK Tales is brought to you in partnership with MK2MK. MK2MK is a fantastic ministry. They are an extension of Crew. They are specifically targeting missionary kids. So basically, they are missionary kids ministering to missionary kids, thus the name MK2MK. They have a ton of fantastic resources, as well as trips, summer internships, projects, retreats, all of that. So check them out at their website, mk2mk.com. There's a link in my website. Check them out. They are an amazing ministry that have had a profound effect in my life.